Afternoon, I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Thursday, March 21st, 2024. We are in the Barnes Committee Room, Room 124 of the Alaska State Capitol Building. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:37 p.m. Sorry, we're a little delayed. We have business to do on the floor. Today we have President Representative McKay, Representative Vance, Representative Sumner, Representative Mina, and myself, Chair McCabe. The staff assisting us today are the Recording Secretary Sophia Tenney, Moderator Susan Quigley, and my Committee Aide Angela Steffel. Thank you, ladies, for your help today. If everyone could please silence their cell phones. We have two items on today's schedule: House Bill 332, an act relating to the sale of the Alaska Railroad and providing for an effective date, sponsored by Representative Sumner. We will be given an introduction and overview of the bill by Representative Sumner and his staff, Clark Bickford. We'll go through an introduction, the sectional, and take committee questions. My plan is to introduce this bill and then set it aside today. And before we begin, do we have committee members with any questions? No? Okay. And I'm sorry, we've also been joined by Representative Stutz. Thanks, Tanya. So, seeing none, Representative Sumner and Mr. Bickford, welcome. Please place your name on the record and tell us about the bill. And when can we expect the auctioneer to be in?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, Jesse Sumner, representative from District 28. This legislation represents a critical turning point for our state, unlocking economic potential while ensuring protections for the interests of Alaskans. For years, the Alaska Railroad has served our communities but has not reached its full potential. Operating under state ownership, the railroad has faced limitations in terms of investment, innovation, and strategic expansion. This bill initiates a careful, responsible process to transfer the railroad to a private buyer committed to the railroad's success. This legislation protects Alaskans' interests in several ways. The potential buyer must agree to operate the railroad for at least 50 years and assume existing contracts, providing continuity for our communities and businesses. The purchase price must exceed the fair market value or the state's total investment in the railroad, ensuring taxpayers receive a fair return. The legislature retains the ultimate authority to approve or reject a sale agreement, safeguarding public interest. And by establishing a resource development agreement, this bill positions the Alaska Railroad to be a key catalyst for unlocking responsible, sustainable expansion of our state's vast resources. Additionally, this process will streamline governance and inject much needed private sector expertise into the railroad's operations. The bill recognizes the potential for modernization, expansion, and creation of new Alaskan jobs through this strategic sale. I recognize that any change in the Alaska Railroad's status raises questions and concerns. This bill addresses those with care through transparent process focused on obtaining the best long-term outcomes for our state. I urge my colleagues to join me in voting in favor of this legislation, allowing us to write the next successful chapter in Alaska Railroad's history. And Mr. Chair, if I could turn it over to my staff, Clark Bickford, for sectional analysis.
That would be awesome. Mr. Bickford.
Yes. excuse me. For the record, Clark Bickford, staff to Rep. Sumner. Sectional analysis on HB 332. In Section 1, this section would mandate the sale of the Alaska Railroad by setting strict timelines for the governor to issue a request for proposals and enter into a sales agreement. The buyer of the railroad must commit to continuing operations for a minimum of 50 years, as Representative Sumner said. Assume all existing contracts of the Alaska Railroad Corporation and pay a purchase price exceeding either the fair market value of the railroad or the total amount the state has invested in the railroad. The sale agreement is subject to legislative approval, and the Railroad Corporation is restricted from any actions that could diminish the railroad's value before the sale. The state shall retain an easement on Alaska Railroad right-of-way lands for transportation, communication, and transmission purposes. The governor must commission a fair market appraisal of the railroad, report on both the appraisal and the sale procedures to the legislature, and adopt regulations to implement this appraisal, I'm sorry, to implement this act. Upon completion of the sale, the Alaska Railroad Corporation will be dissolved and non-essential railroad property will be transferred to the Department of Natural Resources. The sale process is exempt from standard state procurement codes and regulations governing the Alaska Railroad Corporation. Finally, in this section, the sale of the railroad is contingent upon the execution of a resource development agreement, which is likely outlined in a section of this bill. In section two underscores the strong connection between the sale of the Alaska Railroad and the state's goal of promoting resource development. It would require the buyer of the Alaska Railroad to enter into a resource development agreement with the state within 180 days of the sale. This agreement must demonstrate the buyer's commitment to actively invest in expanding and improving the railroad to better facilitate resource development projects within the state. This agreement must contain key elements, including a state pledge to allocate a portion of the sale proceeds for railroad modernization, expansion, and maintenance, specifically including new rail lines for resource access. The buyer commits to working with the state, local communities, and other stakeholders to determine strategic locations for new railroad infrastructure to support resource development. In this section, the buyer will regularly report to the state and legislature on the agreement's implementation, including construction progress. Finally, the agreement must outline a process for resolving any potential disputes between the state and the buyer. Section 3, the section would establish a process to identify and categorize all assets belonging to the Alaska Railroad Corporation. The governor is tasked with compiling this inventory, which must include all real property, personal property, and intangible assets. The governor must then determine which assets are vital for the railroad's operation and classify the remaining assets separately. This comprehensive report is due to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee by August 1st, 2024. Importantly, the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee has the authority to recommend changes to the governor's asset identification and classification. This likely provides additional layer of oversight and scrutiny to asset identification process and preparation of the railroad sale. And finally, Section 4 establishes that this act would take place immediately.
Okay, thank you. I think any additional comments, Rep. Sumner, before we go to questions? We also have Charles Koop, the COO of Alaska Railroad, is online on the phone if we have any questions for him. Questions for the committee, Representative Stute. Somehow I knew you'd be right there.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. What is the real purpose of this? I mean, are you trying to bring attention to resource development? I'm really baffled by this. And so what is your ultimate goal? I'm fairly confident your ultimate goal is not to see the sale of the railroad through. So what would be your ultimate goal with presenting this bill?
Well, through the chair to Representative Stutes, I think that at least a conversation about the direction the railroad is headed and resource development, I think, is in order. Whether or not ultimately we should sell the railroad, it's up for debate. Certainly has been contemplated in the past, and if we were going to do that, I think this would be the best way to do it. So I welcome the debate on it, certainly, and I think introducing a bill is a good way to have that. If the committee wants, they could advance the bill.
So I'm sure I can answer a little bit of that, and I know that you have both you and Representative Mead have questions, Rep. Vance, but the railroad has not built one single mile of track since 1985 when we bought them. Our resource development in that time period has been stifled beyond belief. If we had had resource development, we've talked about it before. You don't get resource development without transportation. The biggest, largest, best transportation facility or venue or whatever you want to call it that we have in the state, other than the Marine Highway, is the railroad, right? They haven't kept up with our needs. So whether it's their fault or our fault, it could be both. It probably is both. Or maybe it's even the majority of our fault. But at this point, we've got to do something. So we have to open a conversation. You know, there are people out there that would be interested in building track and helping the state of Alaska develop their resources. And so that's, is this a motivational bill? Probably. But it's also a venue if we need it. So
thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Sumner. I get it. I mean, it's an attention getter. And I think that that's the motivation here. And like you said, if there's been no track built or whatever, I get it. I was just curious. Thank you.
Who was first? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll ask just a couple questions and then I'll rotate around. My first question goes back to through the chair, Chair McCabe. We were looking into the history of the railroad and when it was sold back to the state. And I know after the sale of the federal government's railroad to the state, it took about 2 years until they passed that legislation for the state to buy it. And a lot of those conversations revolved around economic concerns, environmental concerns, social concerns, et cetera. And I know that resource development has always been a part of the role and purpose of the railroad. Is that in statute?
Through the chair, is the question, what is the question? Is resource development for the railroad in statute? Is that the question?
Yes, through the chair, if I may rephrase, is resource development part of the statutory responsibilities of the Alaska Railroad Corporation?
Oh, we could get back to you on that, but I believe hauling freight for resource development, okay. Maybe, but I don't have the statutes memorized, but we'll certainly get back to you on that.
Thank you. May I follow up?
Sure. Follow up.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, I'd love to learn more about what you believe the railroad isn't currently doing and potential management changes that should be happening in lack of goals relating to resource development.
Through the chair, Representative Mina. So I believe the railroad has done a pretty decent job of doing exactly what they were doing, what is it, over 40 years ago. But if we want them to do anything else, which I think we do, because there is a lot of resource development potential, there's possibly been proposals for, you know, passenger trains and all those sort of things. So if we want the railroad to do anything other than what they were doing right when they were transferred to the state, I think that we do need to do something. So, because they've done a pretty good job of just doing the same thing. And I think that's a kind of something that a state organization can easily fall into.
One last follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, is there anything in statute right now that's preventing the Railroad Corporation from doing something?
No, and actually I believe in statute there's supposed to be a report to the legislature on potential offers for sale of the railroad. They are supposed to, I believe there's a process in statute, and we can get the exact language to you, that the railroad is supposed to every so often notify the legislature, I believe, about potential for selling the railroad.
So, thank you.
Thank you.
So, yeah, Representative Mina, it's in statute years ago, right after we first purchased them, and maybe for a decade or so afterwards, they were required every 5 years to have a proposal, and I think three RFPs or three possible buyers – and an appraisal of the railroad, that was reduced by us to the point where it's just a statement now on the on their yearly report, which has been neglected in the last couple of years. So we really have no idea, I don't think, of the value of the railroad, what it would be worth to the state. If it's several billion dollars, I believe the railroad has shown us in all their reports that they're not hugely in debt, that Mr. O'Leary has done a good job of sort of just keeping the railroad, even through COVID, on an even keel, and his team, of course. So we sort of have this asset out there that's just kind of cost neutral. It's not hurting us. It's not helping us. And we are saying that we would really like their help developing our resources. And so that's kind of the gist of it. But there, you're absolutely right. There is a history on what we were supposed to do as far as what they were supposed to do as far as looking for buyers. So Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair. I appreciate creativity in getting us to think outside of what we have typically been doing for business. I think the only way that we're going to establish economic stability is to do exactly that. So I want to see what this conversation brings. And we won't know if there's any potential buyers out there if we don't make ourselves available. So I would like to have an understanding, first of all, of what the value of the railroad is to the state of Alaska, not only in its assets and its dollar value, but in us controlling that as a state. I am full on for empowering the private sector, and sometimes I think that government needs to get out of the way. But in the bill, you specifically focus on resource development, which obviously that's where we have incredible potential. But we've recently heard in past bonding bills that deal with the tourism industry. And on the Kenai Peninsula, that's one of the larger functions of the railroad. So what is your vision for a potential sale and not losing that important relationship with the tourism industry?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, certainly I wouldn't want to lose the passenger traffic that the railroad has now, and the tourism industry should be promoted. I would think that would actually be potentially a very profitable aspect of the railroad that I don't think a private purchaser would do away with. Certainly, any additional language to be put in the bill would be a policy call of the committee, and more than welcome. So, thank you.
Follow up.
Thank you, and I would like to note for the record, we've been joined by Representative Johnson, Mr. Rules Chair at 155. Follow up, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The other question that I have is just kind of understanding the makeup of railroads across the nation and how they've been able to increase economic development and be an asset. Are most of them used as a state corporation like in Alaska, or are they private companies that deal on contractual basis? Can you kind of give us a landscape of why selling our state corporation would put us on par with everyone else?
For the record, Clark Pickford, Rep. Sumner's office. I'd be happy to get a side-by-side of other railroads across the country and how they compare to our railroad, and I think I could answer part of it, but I would rather know the full answer to give to you accurately. So I can get that to you after the committee.
And through the chair, Jesse Sumner, for the record, I believe pretty strongly that the situation is not state corporations being the common. owners of railroads across the nation. But we will get you that exact side by side. Thank you.
So as it happens, I have done a lot of study on this. And I believe Amtrak is the only government-owned railroad in the lower 48. I could be wrong on that, but and they are probably the only passenger railroad other than some of the smaller subways. Most of the freight railroads, interestingly enough, are privately owned, and they run on tracks that are sort of a mishmash of what they own, which is what kind of brought this to my attention in the first place, was the there was a guy that's interested in buying the railroad, and he owns his own railroad between Texas and Louisiana or something. There's also a company that specializes in building short railroads, like 32 miles from Port McKenzie to the main rail. That is so there is some interest out there, and I just think we need to explore it. And I appreciate Representative Sumner for bringing this bill to us. And I think we had two more questions. You might have had a follow-up.
I have one more follow-up.
Sure.
And this, how would the sale of the Alaska Railroad impact our even longer-term goal of the A-to-A? And would it make it easier to have that relationship, or would that pose some governmental hiccups? I mean, the private industry does this frequently. I'm obviously, you don't have to have an answer for that today, but I know that the two of you have thought about this because we have our more immediate goals of expanding in the state, but then it's always been a long-term goal to connect that with the contiguous U.S. and kind of wanting to make sure that that relationship is formidable.
Thank you, and through the chair. I don't know what happened there. So that's really a nuanced question that we can look into quite a bit, but I would think that a private organization would be more nimble in those negotiations. And also, I'd like to thank the chair for, as always, for his expertise in transportation. It is greatly appreciated.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. I have three questions, and those are my last ones. And it might be for Mr. Hop on the line. And I appreciate
Coop.
Yeah. Mr. Coop, I appreciate the chair's background in research on railroads. And from our research, we're the only state-owned railroad. My first question is related to the land that the railroad owns. And I know that one of the sections of the bill goes over identifying the assets and reallocating them. And so my first question is, what happens to that land for the railroad? And I'm curious to hear the perspective from Mr. Coop.
Mr. Coop, did you hear the question, sir?
I did, and can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Go ahead and put your name on the record, please.
Okay, and for the record, I enjoy listening to the attempts at my name. My name is Clark Hopp, Chief Operating Officer of the railroad.
So my mistake.
H-O-P-P. Well, as I understand the bill, and like I said, I'm by no means a legislative expert, that those excess properties outside of the operating right-of-way of the railroad would be transferred back to other agencies within the state. So, you know, at a high-level answer to that question, those properties typically generate in excess of $30 million a year in revenue for the Alaska Railroad. So that would be a challenge. One of the challenges in privatizing the railroad would be that loss of revenue from those operating or those non-operating lands that would transfer to other state departments.
Follow up?
Yes. Thank you for the clarity on the revenue. Through the chair, follow up. For that land, and I'm trying to make a comparative between, the benefits of the railroad being under the state versus being privatized, does an outside private company understand Alaska's unique challenges as well as the state does, or could you speak to some benefits of the railroad being in coordination with the state?
Yeah, through the chair, I think that's a hard question for the railroad to answer, or what a perspective of an outside private company would be. Certainly, I think, you know, it was envisioned in 85 when the railroad was purchased. You know, there was a lot of forward thinking, knowing that the freight revenues would, and passenger revenues would go up and down and be cyclical, so that, you know, there would be a good share of land. That's what a lot of the land reserves were for, that kind of tied the railroad over from good times to bad times, to be a steady source of income. So, you know, I think, you know, there was quite a bit of visionary thinking at the time of transfer to the state about those lands. So they have been a good source of revenue for the railroad. So to answer what another private company and how they would see that, see the challenges in Alaska, that'd be hard for me to answer.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, Mr. Chair, one last question. There's a lot of union employees that work at the railroad on top of the contractors that work with the railroad. If there was a sale, what happens to a lot of those union contracts, and could you go through that process? Thank you.
Again, thank you. Through the chair, I think those are questions that I'd have a hard time answering. We're a long ways away from that. You know, we serve at the pleasure of the governor and the state. If that, you know, if we were to move forward with that, I think that was something that we would have to certainly address and look out for our current employees, you know, as far as you know, what their future looks like, and even how their pension would be impacted. So there are a lot of unanswered questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hopp, Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair to Representative Mina. So I direct your attention to Section 1, Part 2 of the bill, where it says that they shall accept assignment of all contracts, including collective bargaining agreements, retirement obligations, and agreements with connecting carrier shippers, et cetera. So those contracts would continue. I would imagine the expiry of those contracts, there would be further negotiations, but it certainly wouldn't be liquidating state employees or anything of the sort. Thanks. Railroad employees.
Any other questions? So a couple things. One of the things that is very concerning to me as the Transportation Committee Chair and also sitting on resources, and it should be concerned to all of us, is we have this wonderful deep draft port in Port McKenzie that doesn't have a rail to it. Every single deep draft port, I think with the exception of a couple in the lower 48, have rail access to them. It's imperative that we get rail to Port McKenzie. And if it has to be through a private corporation instead of a state corporation, that's probably what we have to do. And in addition, as Representative Vance mentioned, A2A is out there waiting for us, essentially. I've been in close contact with several ministers from the MLAs from Alberta and Saskatchewan, and they are highly interested still. The governments are. Yes, the private guy that they had in there was had some issues, and that kind of the deal kind of fell apart. And I know it seems like pie in the sky, but there are many, many, many reasons to complete that rail through Canada to the lower 48. It might even be just as small a reason as hauling clean Alaska coal to the power plant in North Dakota that some of our folks visited earlier, or maybe hauling potash from Saskatchewan back to Port McKenzie or the Port of Anchorage for shipment to Asia. So lots of good reasons, I think, to complete the railroad. It's a big dream, but this is a big state, and we've dreamt big before. Also keep in mind that our Constitution requires that us as the legislature develop our resources as best we can for maximum yield, maximum sustainability, and as I said twice now, can't do without transportation. So, Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. I think it's great. I think it's a great wake-up call. You know, it's been business as usual, it sounds like, for 40 years. And it's time that we've said, no, you know, you've gotten a little too comfortable. You sit back, you have your feet up on the footstool collecting your paycheck, and we need to do a little more developing and moving the state in a forward direction. So I think it's great. I commend you for the wake-up call, not only to the railroad, but to us.
Rep. Vance.
Mr. Chairman, speaking of, you know, Port McKenzie specifically, and also the Northern Rail, what opportunities are there for private businesses to partner with the Alaska Railroad to be, if they said, hey, it is of our benefit to help build this rail, how easy is that for them to partner with the Alaska Railroad? I think that would help me understand more of what our authority is and maybe, you know, what we need to do besides just allowing bonding from the railroad or for the railroad. Because I think, you know, that's what you've been getting at, is that we're letting these great opportunities go by for far too long. And this is right there. So if you have that answer off the top of your head, that would be helpful. I'm sure that you probably do. You've been working on this for several years, but what do we need to do to help encourage this? Selling may be an option, but if there's anything else that's more immediate, then we should investigate that.
Sure. So I think you, Rep Vance, you watched Mr. O'Leary, and we had one of the cruise ship folks in here, and he's done an admirable job of working with them to develop the Seward port and the Seward dock. And there are a number of entities that are very interested in Port McKenzie, but they're not going to do it unless there's rail there. Right now in Seward, there is rail all the way to that dock. So it's one of those things, if you build it, they will come, or do we try to attract them first? So we sort of balance on this razor's edge of, we have a bunch of interest over here that's not quite really willing to commit anything until the railroad commits, or we commit as a legislature to finishing the Port McKenzie rail spur. And I think that's key. Get Tidewater first, get some businesses moving in and out through Port McKenzie. And then as the railroad starts to earn revenue and starts to make a little bit more, and we see, the legislature sees that we can do this, then we work on the 82 or 84 miles of the Northern Rail extension and start working real closely with Canada and moving forward that way. We have dozens of letters out to various companies that are interested. There are a few in Port McKenzie that already have leases, but they haven't built on them because they don't know what we're doing. So Port McKenzie is a blank slate. It's ready for whatever. We told the military that. The military is very interested. So there's a bunch of moving pieces, and they're all starting to kind of coalesce. And I think that we need the railroad on board. Any other questions?
Just a couple of comments, Chair.
Sure. Representative McKay.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just through the chair, just a few thoughts maybe to put on the record. You know, when you consider the Arctic nations, there's 8 Arctic nations, as everybody here knows. Russia's probably got the most development in the Arctic. And if we're going to, if America and Canada, our closest ally in the Arctic, is going to advance, then we, you know, we're doing things like we put in the port in Nome so we can have icebreaker support. So that kind of takes care of the marine side. And then if you, for instance, if you add rail to Prudhoe Bay, then, you know, you could potentially link up Prudhoe all the way to Chicago with the A2A. And you have to look like 50 years ahead, 75 years ahead. And there's a lot of discussion about natural resource development in the Arctic and how America and Canada need to be on the forefront of that and not let Russia get too strong a foothold. So it seems to me that we're very forward thinking and to be thinking about these things. I think it's great to have dreams, and some of those dreams are not, they're not dreams, they're you know, it's forward thinking. And to have rail to the Arctic and shipping. And then, of course, obviously the military, would support the military in the Arctic and give us a strong foothold up there. So this all ties in together, and I just wanted to add that for you to consider, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Rep. McKay. I'm starting to do it. That's horrible. Everybody else does it.
It's pretty bad.
I know, right? So, a couple things. One of the things we didn't talk about, or I didn't talk about, is that right now there's a significant pressure on our roads for resource development. And there are people with concerns, whether it be the Parks Highway, the Alaska Highway, the Richardson. There are people with legitimate concerns about what big trucks are going to do to our roads. So this railroad would go a long way towards mitigating that. You can't imagine what if, there's a gold mine considered right outside of Willow. If they had to haul doubles like the black gold trucking doubles down through downtown Anchorage to get to the Port of Alaska, that would be untenable. I mean, the people just wouldn't tolerate those big trucks going through the city. And so this is a good solution, I think, and it's a needed solution. The other thing to consider is one of the things that Rahm Emanuel said when he came up and gave us the talk at the governor's sustainable energy conference last year was that Port McKenzie and the Port of Alaska are 7 days sail from our Indo-Pacific allies. For them to get coal or minerals out of Australia is about 14 days, and it has to go through the tropical convergence zone, which is a pretty poor weather and some political issues around the Philippines. So we are uniquely positioned to help our allies, our Indo-Pacific allies, South Korea, Japan, Singapore. And we need to consider that strategically. I think we should be considering it because the Arctic is being developed. We have, I think we heard the other day that we have the largest antimony deposit in the United States. In Alaska, just north of at the top of the Matsu, and if we were able to ship that to our allies, that would be fabulous. Because right now, Russia and China control it all in the world. So, and keep in mind as well is that resource development creates new wealth. You know, we're struggling because we have we're kind of a one-trick pony. We have oil. I mean, you and I know we have fish and everything else, but as far as the PFD and our budget and everything else, by and large, it comes from oil, and we need to diversify, I think. The PFD, right? Representative Stutes.
I do have a question, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I appreciate it through the chair. And I'm just asking because I'm curious. Any idea what it costs to build 1 mile of railroad tracks?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
We've heard our estimate for 32 miles at Port McKenzie is $247 million.
That's 30 miles?
Yeah, for 32 miles. The private company that we have talked to said that is wildly overinflated, that they can do it for about $400,000 a mile.
Wow.
So Port McKenzie, for instance, has a 32-mile stretch. It's a 32-mile stretch, and there's 7.2 miles of roadbed that needed to be developed, but it's all flat over a farmer's field for the most part. And then we need to lay rail. So somewhere between those two estimates, $400,000 a mile, the Federal Railroad Administration, when I talked to them in Boise last summer, estimated about $1 million a mile. So somewhere in there is
that's
the figure.
A pretty wide span,
right?
Okay, thank you. I was just curious.
Anything else, Rep. Sumner?
No, thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
No other questions. All right, gentlemen, I appreciate you being here today. I'm going to set this bill aside. And next, we have under bills previously heard consideration of HB 386. So we've received no amendments. We have done public testimony, and I'd like to look to the will of the committee as far as moving the bill along to judiciary.
Okay. I second the motion.
Okay. Let's do it. Well, with that.
Dump it.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 386, Work Order 33-GH2378/A from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Object.
Okay. Discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may speak to my objection to this bill and thinking about the goal of this bill and the presentation that we've heard, I know that a lot of the goal is trying to figure out how we can help prevent and de-escalate violence that we see when people exercise their First Amendment rights. And so thinking about this as a member of the House Transportation Committee, I think about what our role is in balancing community safety, individual safety, prioritizing the movement of people, and also balancing those individual rights and the right to assembly. The problem that we see does happen in other states, and it does happen around the world. We haven't seen it here. And I know that we often legislate based on not only whether something has happened, but also if it happens, and whether we have a role and if it's necessary to have a law to address a problem if it happens. The testimony that I've heard and that I've read have been primarily in opposition to the bill, and a lot of the concerns relate to the broad nature of the bill. And it's not a bad idea for us to think about ways that we can help promote freedom of movement and prioritize safety, but I really have grave concerns about the broad nature of this bill in relation to our First Amendment rights. You know, thinking about how we have the Boston Tea Party and the way that civil disobedience is how we founded this nation. Selma was mentioned in public testimony that resulted in many hundreds of arrests, Bloody Sunday, and violence that happened from those crimes, and the elevation of attention to issues that were happening led to the passage of the Civil Rights Act. And there are research papers that are out there that looked at protests that happened in 2020, whether they were related to COVID or Black Lives Matter, people who were exercising their First Amendment rights, and the majority of those protests were nonviolent. And so thinking about the very small percentage of protests and rallies that do become violent, I'm not confident that this bill would lead in a de-escalation. I think it's too broad, and I look forward to seeing the Judiciary Committee address many of these concerns. Thank you.
Thanks, Representative Mina. Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was a little flippant when I said let's dump it on Judiciary, but it does concern me, this bill, and I have read the bill, and I watched, I can't remember what committee it was, the public testimony, and I didn't hear one individual supporting this bill, not one. This seems to be one of those pieces of legislation that's a solution looking for a problem. And so I would have to agree with Representative Mina. It's a little bit alarming to see something like this. And it's just, it's so vast that it really is, in my opinion, not good legislation. Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, the public testimony was this committee, and you were you weren't here.
Yeah, you're mad at me. No, I watched it. It was this committee, and there wasn't not one positive.
Representative McKay.
So, Mr. Chairman, to kind of offer a little balance to the conversation, the riots of 2020 were far from minor. They were, you know, the city of Minneapolis was virtually destroyed. There were several cities that entire blocks were ruined, burned, businesses destroyed. The riots of 2020 were far from an inconsequential event. And I think this legislation is just make sure that something like that doesn't happen in our fair state. there's plenty of ways for people to protest. There's permit processes where they can have peaceful, organized protests. We see it right out here in front of the Capitol last week. But we don't need people, you know, gluing themselves to the road so that you can't get to the hospital or you can't get to the airport. We don't need people barricading themselves in front of police stations or other critical, you know, fire departments or other critical facilities. So I support the bill, and I don't really see where it's a big problem for Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It has happened in Alaska. Back in the early 70s, there were a group of people that chained themselves to a road to prevent sale of timber in the Tongass. They basically had no recourse. They sat there for a while. So it has happened here. So to say it hasn't happened, it's been a while, but it has happened. One of the big concerns I have is we are a stand your ground state. And I can see one group of people with the right to glue themselves to the pavement have the right to be there. Another group of people with the right to be where they are ending up in a bad situation. And both of them will be within the law, although one of them is just driving to work and the other are doing a what I consider a malicious protest to stop commerce, to stop safety. So I'd hate to see a shootout. I guess if somebody's got their hands glued to the ground, it's going to be an unfair fight, but I'd hate to see us get into a situation where two people or two groups, both right, shooting at each other. And I think if we don't do something like that, we're setting ourselves up for eventually that kind of thing. And it doesn't hurt to plan for the future because we see it all around us. And we see it coming from groups that are well-funded and large and international, and they'll pay a $1,000 fine all day long. Means nothing. They just call up a big donor and they get another bunch of money. So the fine is inconsequential. You know the word I'm thinking for. It doesn't matter.
Inconsequential.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
So
Mr. McKay. So that's all I have to say. I'm real concerned about us, you know, digressing to that. And who knows what the next protest will be? It could be Willow, it could be Prudhoe Bay, it could be the railroad,
right?
Port McKenzie. I mean, they could be, you know, chaining right. themselves in. So I think that a bill like this, to put it on record to say this is not acceptable in Alaska, peaceful protest, all you want. You have a right, First Amendment right. We love it, but don't obstruct commerce and other people's way of life.
Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think gluing yourself to the railroad would probably be a very poor decision, but the tracks. So I support this bill. I won't obstruct the free movement of the bill to the Judiciary Committee. And I'd like to, I guess, if the objection is maintained, have a vote on it.
Thank you. I just would like to say one thing. You don't get to talk. It's going to your committee next. So, no, go ahead, sir. Rep. Vance.
Well, I would just like to point out that, number one, it is already a crime to chain yourself or glue yourself to the railroad. So this bill is essentially doing the similar thing, that saying you cannot, it is detrimental to your health to glue yourself to the highway, to obstruct someone else's right, freedom of movement. And especially when it causes someone else to harm or to lose their life. And so this is not a new concept in the state. It also, you know, in Section 2, a person who violates A1 of the section is guilty of a Class C felony. We just passed a religious liberty bill on the House floor that it was a property rights issue that said that if you are destroying religious property, that it is a Class C felony. So this is, I just want to show that we are already doing similar things in law and are very much okay with it. this is a matter of public safety in my mind. It is in no way limiting the constitutional rights of Alaskans. With our rights come responsibility, and I think that's important. Our right to assemble is to right to peaceably assemble. I come from Homer. I grew up there. If there's anyone who can protest, it is my community. But they do so in a manner that is respectful to the movement of the vehicles, of the commerce, and they work it out so that they are able to be safe. And I think that's possible for everyone. We don't want to limit anyone's freedom of speech or right to assemble. And this bill, in my mind, in no way does that, but it puts everyone on an equal playing field that says that their right to get from where they need to go from point A to point B is not going to be obstructed. So I think this is a pretty simple, straightforward bill that aligns with what we are already doing in other areas of law. But I'm surprised that we don't have it already, but it's one of those things that we need to do to help protect Alaskans as we are expanding and developing more roads and ways to get from here to there. So thank you for letting me.
Sure. So the thing is my turn. The thing is, you know, we said it on the floor. One man's protest is another man's vandalism. So where do the rights to the protesters end, and where do the rights to free movement in our state and on our roads begin? So what if, say, Greenpeace wanted to protest some sort of fishing and they lined their boats up along Trident Basin? What do you think those fishermen would do if they were trying to get out for an opener?
Well, I'm pretty sure I know it.
Yeah, so that's the Attorney General's point, right? Is it's kind of preventative. He wants to prevent those Kodiak fishermen from piling through the Greenpeace boats on their way out to a pretty lucrative opener, or possibly prevent an ambulance, the protesters preventing an ambulance from getting through and just driving over them, or even worse, a private person that's on its way to work and he's going to get fired if he doesn't get there, and he's going to go right over those protesters. And we've seen the videos. Everybody's seen the videos of it. So the Attorney General, I think, in what he transmitted to me, looks at this as a preventative bill, trying to prevent somebody from getting harmed, which is a lot of what we do in the legislature, right? But we also have to leave room for the protesters. So it's a fine line. I think it came to transportation because it is the sort of glue your hands on the pavement thing, and blocking roads, which seems to be the protest du jour these days, where they line up along the Glen Highway and all lock arms so you can't drive past them trying to make a point. I get their point, but what about the people who also have rights to get to work, to go pick their kid up from school, to get in an ambulance and go somewhere? So where do their rights collide, and what can we do to make it easier for both of them to accomplish their goals? So, Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. And I really appreciate the discussion about, you know, the tension that we have between the rights that we're trying to settle from the perspective of ensuring movement. I have a couple of responses. The first related to riots that happened in 2020, and I absolutely don't disagree that there was violence and destruction of property that happened. Those are crimes. And so I think there are ways to enforce the violation of individuals' private property rights in those circumstances. The second just related to prevention and this being a preventative measure. I think a lot about the likelihood of different types of protests and what we've seen. And so in the scenario that you do have a lot of boats blocking folks who are fishing, that would certainly be a problem. It doesn't really happen ever, but what I do see oftentimes is in people who are congregating together at the front steps of the Capitol, in town square, who are going around the roads. In Anchorage, we have a critical mass riot where people are biking together. And so I do have concerns about how broad the bill is in relation to the regular protests that people do. And we've had truckers who were also exercising their First Amendment rights. So I want to make sure that those are protected for everybody. And furthermore, just in terms of people gluing their hands on the highway, on the Glen, I agree that would not be a successful protest. That's a bad idea. You shouldn't do that. But I have a lot of friends who are organizers who help organize rallies. And, you know, I've talked to them pretty often about this bill and their perspective and the concerns from the Attorney General and from this committee of what would happen if there were emergency services that would need to get through. And they said, of course we would get out of the way. And so I think we have to be mindful of thinking about people who are doing these actions. These are also Alaskans who care about people having access to emergency services. And I have friends who were part of that action near Nanana that the Attorney General spoke about. And I asked them what would happen if there was an EMS service that were to go through. And they also said, what services? You know, and so we have to think more contextually about different aspects of this bill. And one last response just related to the fine. My friends who are involved in or exercising their First Amendment rights aren't funded by big organizations. And I think they would be curious just to know where money could come from to help support the protests. And so I actually do think like a $100 fine is a bit of a deterrence there. It's working, and I'm glad that we have pretty peaceful protests that occur. And so in areas where there's this gray area of not having a permit but exercising your First Amendment rights, the Constitution's my permit, and I look forward to the judiciary tackling that aspect.
Cool. So just one comment in response to that. If you blocked off the Glen during afternoon traffic in several certain spots, one way in, one way out, you wouldn't necessarily know that 3 miles at the end of the car pileup there was an ambulance trying to get through. So just saying, well, yes, we'd let them through, if they're right there, if the ambulance is the first one at the row of protesters, absolutely they would let them through. I mean, that's human nature. We're going to do that, right? You're not going to block an ambulance. The problem is you might not even know that the ambulance or the fire trucks are 3 miles down the road at the end of, you know, 5,000, 6,000 cars in the traffic jam. So that can be a problem. And I think the larger part of this bill, the Attorney General spoke to where he talked about being able to arrest people. Right now he can't. The cops can give them a ticket and that's it. But if they can arrest people and move them out of the way, they got a radio, there's an ambulance 3 miles down the road, we need to get you out of the way. You're under arrest, you're going to sit in my car, we're going to clear you out so we can clear traffic out. You know, so I agree that there's definitely room for discussion. And so I'm interested to see how this will go forward. So, any other discussion? Okay, you maintain your objection?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Tenney, will you please call the roll?
Representative Johnston.
Yes.
Representative McKay.
Yes.
Representative Vance.
Yes.
Representative Stute.
Yes.
Representative Mina.
No.
Representative Sumner.
Yes.
Chairman Cain.
Yes.
6 yeas, 1 nay.
Okay, with about a 6 yeas and 1 nay, Bill 386, Work Order 33-GH2378/ALPA, is reported from the Transportation Committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 26, when I'll bring HB 376 back before the committee, take public testimony, and if the committee doesn't have any amendments, I'll look to the committee to move it out to its next committee of referral. If you have amendments, I'll set an amendment date, and we'll discuss it from there. And then next Thursday, March 28th, we will hear from the Department of Revenue on bonding and financing infrastructure in Alaska. That presentation was meant to happen a week and a half ago before the other discussion we had on 122 for the railroad. So this is a little bit late. I was hoping to have the bonding discussion before we actually put out the bonds authorization for ADA and the railroad. So Please stay around to sign the committee report for HB 386. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that the time is 2:37 p.m.